Welcome to Sound Practice, the business podcast for physicians and healthcare leaders, hosted by Mike Tsakopoulos and produced by the American Association for Physician Leadership.
What kills a skunk is the publicity it gives itself. Abraham Lincoln. President Lincoln seems to be taking the glass half empty approach to publicity. Today, we're looking at media relations in healthcare. We will hear how one hospital has benefited from thoughtful media relations. Next on Sound Practice. My guest today is Dan Collins. Dan is the Senior Director of Media Relations at Mercy Medical Center in Baltimore. He's a former journalist with several organizations, including the Washington Times and the Baltimore Examiner. Dan Collins, welcome to Sound Practice.
Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
It's our pleasure. It occurred to me when I was preparing for our time together that I'm unclear on the difference between media relations and public relations. Can you just give me a quick 30,000-foot view of the two?
Well, public relations is the tree. Media relations is the branch. And I would say media relations is probably the biggest branch of the tree. But there are other things that go into public relations beyond media. Publication work, video production, dealing with internal issues, internal communications among your employees, if you're talking about corporate PR. And there's very different types of PR. There's government PR. There's corporate PR. There's nonprofit PR. All relevant to, trying to help your organization achieve its goals and objectives, whatever they may happen to be. Media relations is sort of part of that in the sense of this is how you're trying to utilize the media to achieve those goals versus like using, publications to achieve those goals or maybe advertising or marketing to achieve those goals. Because that's the other thing. Advertising marketing should work in tandem with public relations. They should not be in hermetically sealed boxes, but that's the topic for another discussion. So media relations, again, it's always should come back to why are we doing this? And a lot of times we'll run into situations where, in the course of my career where someone, might have a corporate president saying, I want to be on the cover of this magazine. And it's like, well, why? Why do you want to be on the cover of the magazine? Is it ego? Kind of was. Or is there some kind of goal you're trying to achieve, trying to get more customers, trying to get more investors, trying to expand your marketplace? These are the questions, because generally when we're working with folks, executives and so forth, they may have a tendency to think tactically. And because they see somebody else and, one of their colleagues in the same industry, but for another company doing something. So why are we doing that? It's like, well, what were their goals? So in the media relations, you want to use it as a tool, always as a tool to help you achieve whatever your goals are. And that's really the hardest part is getting your executives to sit down and tell you what those goals are. And that's why we were talking before we started about a little bit about the history. There was a gentleman named Arthur Page, who was the vice president of PR for AT&T down in the 1920s, 30s, and 40s. And he is a man who was considered the father of corporate public relations. He was the one who told the executives, the PR person needs to be at the executive table. PR is not something that needs to be slapped on at the end. And there are still some CEOs out there who think PR means press release. No, that's like construction industry equals nail. No, that's not how it is. You need to have that PR person at the table who's working with them to be able to see so they understand what the goals and objectives are. So when they work with the media, they always have that in mind.
That sounds very helpful definition. I'm interested to know a little bit about Mercy Medical Center. Can you tell us about the organization you work for?
Absolutely. It's a wonderful organization. The way I always tell people is before I came to Mercy, the longest I was in any one place was about 3.5 years. Coming up November will be 29 full years at Mercy. Mercy is a wonderful institution. We just celebrated, we are actually within the 150th year of Mercy, founded by the Sisters of Mercy back in 1874. Sisters continue to play a role. Sister Helen Amos, who is now executive board chair, was president and CEO when I came on board. Their mission drives everything that we do. And their mission and the mission values. Mercy has a national reputation for women's health. Back in just before I came on board, almost probably about 33 or 34 years ago, our head of marketing looked into the idea of where was Mercy going to go? What should their focus be? And so a Gallup survey was commissioned. And the upshot of this survey was women's health. Women continue to be, even today, even 30 years ago and today, the gatekeepers for healthcare in most families. And of course, because of the various issues that women have, you know, they have particular medical issues that, you know, most men don't have, obviously, you know, GYN issues and fertility issues and birth and so forth. So I said, that's where the future needs to be. And so rather than just take old programs and slap women's in front of them, I remember one doctor said to me, you know, it takes more to make a women's health center than flowers on the table and pastel wallpaper. So we went and sent out people, visited hospitals across the U.S. and looked at hospitals known for having successful women's health programs and looked at how did they do it and brought that home and decided, no, what we really need to do is recruit physicians who have that strong women's health background. And so we went out and did that. And one of the things that we did, we recruited a gentleman named Dr. Neil Rosenshine, who was head of GYN oncology for Johns Hopkins, you know, so really big name. And we got him to come on board. And he was a great example of the philosophy that Mercy wound up adopting, which we call the magnet doc philosophy. If you have a doctor who has a great reputation, he's going to attract, like a magnet, a lot of patients, and he's also going to attract other physicians because they're like, you know, hey, you know, Neil Rosenshine's left Hopkins to be at Mercy. Mercy must be a great place to go. And that opened the door to us attracting even more great physicians. And so over this 30-year period, we went from being something like seventh in the marketplace in terms of where people, you know, would want to go to for women's health, having a baby, things of that nature, from seventh to number one. And we have continued to build on that ever since. Mercy has also been wise in embracing the concept that people do not choose hospitals. They choose doctors. So in terms of our commercials and spots, we never used actors. We actually used the actual physicians in the spots. And then we also developed some other programs, is where I came into the mix, working with our local NBC affiliate. Starting a program again 3 years ago, which we called The Woman's Doctor. And this is a segment we do with the NBC affiliate WBAL, airs every week, where we have a Mercy physician, hopefully along with a patient, who talks about a particular women's health issue. And we've done that every week for 30 some years. I would say bet my 401k on it, that it's the longest running campaign of its kind for a hospital in the United States. And it's been that successful because we do it every week. It's the same times. It's the same issues. We don't change around. And it's part of the newscast. So having that as a tool is a huge plus for Mercy in terms of getting its name out there, being known for its work in women's health. And since then, we've expanded into other areas. We've got internationally renowned doctors for robotic surgery, surgical oncology. So I like to call, you know, say, what is Mercy? Mercy, I used to say, is the little hospital that could. You know, it's a 200-bed hospital. We're urban, downtown, community hospital. And there was a time when you did the research. I did some research back in like 96, 97, 98, when we were being told that most hospitals were falling into one of like about three categories. They had to, if they were going to continue to thrive, they were going to be successful. They got to become part of a system. No independent hospital, urban hospital is going to make it on its own. They have to merge with maybe one or two others, if not a whole system, or guess what? You're going to go out of business. And Mercy leadership said, no, we don't like those three options. There is a way for us to stay independent, to stay downtown, because you had a lot of hospitals pick up and leave and go to the suburbs. I said, no, we're going to remain true to our commitment and true to our mission, which is to help people who need it the most, which are people in the urban downtown community. Let's figure out how we can do that and stay downtown. And we've done that to the point that we're not just the surviving, we're thriving. So I always say Mercy is really an example for all smaller community hospitals, urban hospitals. The other thing about Mercy is the leadership. We've had good leadership. If you don't have good leadership, it really doesn't matter. And we've been very fortunate. I mentioned Sister Helen Amos, former president, CEO, now executive chair, gentleman who just retired a couple of years ago, Tom Mullen, who was our first lay president and CEO, huge and just genius in terms of what he could do. And then his successor who came on, great job. Once he becomes successor, right in the middle of COVID, Dr. David Main, our first doctor to be a president and CEO. And just, you know, again, another gentleman who has the background, brilliant. And so, you know, we're lucky. We're also been blessed by having great leadership. So all those things together have made Mercy the woman's doctor. We have that brand and people recognize it. And it does make a difference. I really think it does.
Well, I'm sure it does. And it's probably in no small part to media relations. And I'm interested to drill down a little bit more into what day-to-day duties and activities look like for a senior director of media relations.
It's changed over the years. When I first came on board, for example, Mercy had no website. Social media hadn't even been created yet in the like 96, 97, 98, that didn't even exist yet. And in Baltimore, you wanted to be in the Baltimore Sun. And it was like, you know, for me as a media relations person, it was like, that's the goal, get in the Baltimore Sun. And if at all possible, be above the fold, as in old style paper newspaper, the thing that you see through the newspaper box when you went to buy the paper. That was key. Probably second to that was television media. And then you had radio media. And that was really basically it. You had your broadcast, you had your print, and you wanted to have a presence in there, getting your physicians out there. Again, I talked about people don't buy hospitals, they buy doctors. Identifying who the doctor is, the key sort of like the doctors who are part of our centers of excellence, which we had, you know, created over the years. Again, that's women's health, digestive health, cancer surgery, GYN surgery, things of that nature. So getting those doctors out there and using the media to do it. Now, since that time, of course, we've seen a lot of changes occur. Online media, or where we had the print side creating its online side and not realizing that in so doing, they were shooting the print side in the foot, because now it's like, why should I get the print paper, which is going to be a day old, when I can see the news happening online? And so then we saw everything that happened in the media landscape, where it seemed like every day there was some 150-year-old newspaper that was closing its doors. You know, this newspaper closing, that newspaper closing. We mentioned before that I had done some freelance work for the Baltimore Examiner newspaper. That newspaper only lasted like 3 years in Baltimore. And then in 2009, given what was happening in the economy, that one closed. So all these newspapers are closing and the online world is taking off, and then throw right in the middle of that social media. Suddenly there's this thing called Facebook. And there's Twitter, and, you know, people are like saying, what do I do with this? Is this something I can use? And then you've got the old school saying, yeah, we don't need the social media. That's people putting up pictures of their lunch, you know, just put, you know, another ad in a magazine, you know, and on and on. And like, well, you know, so a lot of turmoil that was taking place. And so, again, part of being a good PR professional is you have to stay on top of these trends. You have to stay on top of what's working and what isn't working. That's part of your job. And to tell the executive level that, because they're too busy running the hospital to know what's happening out there. So you got to tell them, no. You can't say that. The language of this has changed. This platform is better for you than another. We see this now on the national level. It's like, what's better, to be a story in the Wall Street Journal or be on Rogan's podcast? You know, and they talk about, like, you know, you get on his podcast and like 20 million people hear and see it. but maybe, you know, who is 20 million people seeing this article in the Wall Street Journal? But back in the 90s, I would have said podcast, you know, who cares about that? Well, I don't even know what that is. Some guy sitting in his basement doing something, you know, it's like, no, you want to be in the Wall Street Journal. You know, that's a big deal. So all knowing that this has changed is part of your job as a media relations person. You have to be, and not just on top of the trends that are happening in media, but in happening whatever your industry is. So same thing with healthcare. And of course, now that's all up in the air, you know, with the Medicare and Medicaid changing. And so, yeah, it's a lot, and it's a lot to deal with.
So, Dan, do you change content based upon platform? Like what you would put on Facebook, would it be different than what you would put on Instagram?
Well, it's interesting you should say that, because Facebook and Instagram are connected. So they kind of both carry over to each other. But no, you make a good point. I mean, obviously, you know, when you're doing with something like on Blue Sky or Twitter, where you've only got so many characters, it's going to be a lot different than what you can put on another social media platform. But again, it's also about knowing that which of the platforms are the ones that are going to be best to reach the people you want to reach. Now, for Mercy, you know, for example, you know, we don't do anything with TikTok. Part of the reason for that is because there's still the national, international world issue with going on. I'm not going to get into all that, but, you know, you know what I'm talking about. That's part of the reason. But also because who is TikTok basically targeting? It's like people 18 to 24 years old. Those are not really our target audience. We're looking at older folks, older women specifically, maybe those who are like 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s. So what platforms are they tuning into? Well, Facebook a lot. LinkedIn even. You know, LinkedIn was like a big thing, and then it was like, oh, LinkedIn's dead, and now LinkedIn is huge again, and now maybe it's going to die again. You know, so again, and that's a part of your job as a PR person to be monitoring this, you know, say, okay, where do we want to have a presence? So yes, you know, we do try to tailor things differently. And the same thing goes beyond the social media platforms, but to print and broadcast as well. You know, how, you know, obviously, like if you're dealing with a doctor and they're going to do an interview, the television station is going to come down to an interview with them that's going to turn into a 1.5 minute spot. The kind of content that I'm going to encourage that doctor to put out is going to be different than if he's doing an in-depth interview with a reporter who writes for a medical trade journal who's going to get very specific about a study or something of that sort. So knowing that and having your people prepared for it is another part of what I do as media relations.
What do you do when somebody posts, and let's say it's not a staff person, this is the general public, posts on some content that you've put out there, and they post something that is just not medically or scientifically factual, anti-vaccine kind of propaganda. How do you respond as a media relations expert to falsehoods that are being posted under your content?
Well, it really kind of depends. Like, for example, the first thing that comes to my mind is Facebook, which is where probably we have the strongest presence. Fortunately, there's a nice little thing in Facebook whereby we can take a remark and hide it. So we're not deleting it, but we can hide it so that the person who posted can still see it and so forth, but really nobody else can. Because again, we're not going to censure people and, you know, and cut them off in that way. Now, if they put something out there that is potentially libelous or is in some way harmful in that it's, you know, beyond just misinformation, but is bringing up a specific case or an issue, we want to know about that. You know, if somebody has a complaint, like this doctor had a problem with me or I had a problem with this doctor, you know, we want to know about that so that we can reach out to that person and find out, you know, how can we help you with that? You know, I often say that, you know, don't look upon somebody's negative comment as, oh, that's a terrible thing. Why the hell dare they say that? It's like, no, wait a minute. There's something behind that. So let's get our patient advocate people in touch with them. Find out, you know, hey, we saw your comment. Obviously, you're upset about something here with this doctor. Let's talk about it. And what can we do to make it right? So the whole idea is let's take this person who was negative and trying to turn them into a positive ambassador for you. So then maybe the next post they put in is one, they might take down their own post And two, they might say, you know, I posted something recently. I was upset. Mercy contacted me, and I'm really happy with how they addressed my problem. So, you know, I just thought I would mention that. So that's huge. You know, so I always say, look at it as a potential opportunity. And how can we go and make this right for this person? And then, as I say, now you have somebody who's now going to be an ambassador for you and reach out to other people and say positive things. So, you know, you look at it from that perspective.
Very nice. Very nice. I'm interested in how someone in your position of media relations interacts with other staff members at a hospital. For example, how can a chief medical officer best work with media relations?
Well, I would say, for example, our chief medical officer, Dr. Wilma Rowe, I'll try to give some good examples. Of course, what you're talking about really came home during the COVID pandemic, obviously. A lot of stuff that was going on. And I was fortunate in that Dr. Rowe was someone who understood, you know, you want to make sure that the people you're working with, whether it's the chief medical officer, the chief executive officer, whoever the executive is, that they understand what you do, have some appreciation for it, and see how it can affect the institution in a positive way, that we're a resource that they can use. So you want to make sure you have that kind of relationship going in. If you don't have that, you know, there's not going to be any communication. So, and that's something that takes some time, you know, from the day you work, move, you know, come into the job day one, you need to build that relationship. So you want to have built that relationship already. And then it's about making sure they understand that whatever issues or things that they're doing relevant to policy within the hospital, or like saying we're doctors are going to do this, or our nursing staff is going to do that, you know, as we're dealing with COVID, and that gets communicated back to me. And so we had a whole system that was set up actually during COVID. We had regular meetings, not just me, but I was included with the rest of the, you know, major executives who were involved within the hospital, talking about the different departments and so forth, so that I was being informed. And then I could take that information, be aware of it. So if I saw something I thought the CMO should know about, I would tell her about it. And so it's just having that back and forth and knowing that, you know, again, that I'm involved. I'm not the caboose to the train. I'm not the set person. Oh, yeah, by the way, you tell the PR guy something. No, that we're involved. You got to have that relationship. And really, you want to sum this all up in terms of what PR people do with doctors and hospitals. It's all about relationships. You know, you've got to be able to show that, you know, what you do will make a positive difference for them. It's going to make their job easier. If all they see upon the media person is like, this person doesn't make my job harder because they asked me this or asked me that, then that's bad. So you want to make sure that you're taking the time to understand them, what they're dealing with, what their issues and problems are, and say, I'm not here to ask something of you. I'm here to help you. How can I help you? If you put it that way, you're on your way to building a great relationship. And then, you know, it just kind of takes care of itself at that point.
Maybe I should have asked before about the chief medical officer, where media relations fits in the corporate governance. I'm kind of imagining the flowchart. To whom does that department report to? How's it structurally set up in not only your hospital, but just generally in health systems?
Well, I don't want to comment too much about other health systems because they're like different species, you know. So it's like, well, what's true of this type of bird may not be true of that type of bird. So I'll kind of speak to my own experience. But in terms of media relations, how it works, and who it reports to, the head of our department, for example, works pretty much directly with the president and CEO, which is a great thing because you want to have that type of access. I've worked for other institutions where it didn't reach up that high, which is one of the reasons I'm not at those other institutions anymore. So I get to be part of the system that's going on. And it goes back again to what I was talking about earlier about what are the goals and objectives of the institution and how is media relations and public relations and marketing, which are all kind of related to like 3 points of one triangle, how all that works together to achieve your goals and objectives. And our goals and objectives are, you know, how do we get patients to come in? How do we increase patient volumes? How do we maintain and sustain patients so that they want to come back and continue to work with us? And how do we create an environment within the hospital that's going to attract top talent and bring other, again, going back to what I talked about earlier, the magnet doc philosophy that's going to drag in and bring in, they bring in more patients, they bring in more physicians of top quality. So media relations, how does that fit into that? No. I got more, but it's like I have a tendency to babble, so I'll let you talk.
That's very helpful. And unfortunately, our time together is coming to an end. But I would like you to discuss how media relations can help with staffing issues. As you know, staffing issues are bedevil many organizations, from not only attracting quality physicians but also nursing staff, so forth. Can media relations help in that regard?
Oh, absolutely. I actually just did a series of pieces with it's a new nursing publication where I got profiles done on like four of our top nurses and been able to share that with them. And they're like, oh, wow, this is really great. You know, this really turned out wonderful. I'm really excited about it. Thanks so much for making me part of it. So guess what? Now they got a positive feeling about it. It's like, I said, I'm glad you like it. Be sure to share this story and this link, you know, with some of your colleagues and so forth. So it's showing that, hey, if I come to Mercy, I'm going to be recognized. I'm going to be listened to. I'm going to be heard. And that's really, I think, what most employees want. They want to know that what they do matters. They're being shown that what they do matters, and media is great for that. You know, showcase them, put them out there. Like we did a piece with the local ABC affiliate, WJZ, for Nurses Week, and had one of their well-known anchors, a gentleman named Marty Bass, has been at WJZ for like eons, come down to this whole big sort of like rally with all the nurses. You know, it's like, hey, you know, again, laying up, letting the nurses be seen, you know, and what they do. And so if I was like, for example, if I was a nurse and I was thinking, where could I work? And I saw some of these stories, I saw some of the TV, I've seen some of the videos that we put out, which is the other thing. And what I'm doing now, working more with we have a vendor that we use called Zinnia Films to create videos that can be used for retention and recruitment. Again, putting those out there, that's going to tell people that, hey, you know, this is actually a pretty good place to work. You know, people think this is a good place. They listen to their people and they give them recognition. And so, you know, that's one way.
Excellent. My guest has been Dan Collins, Senior Director of Media Relations at Mercy Medical Center. Dan, thanks so much for being on Sound Practice.
I enjoyed it. There's a lot more to talk about. So when it comes to media relations, and it keeps changing, as we mentioned. So love to come back again, but I really appreciate the opportunity. And hopefully the folks who listen, hopefully learned a thing or two.
I think so. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
My thanks to Dan Collins for his time and expertise. My thanks also to the American Association for Physician Leadership for making this podcast possible. Please join me next time on Sound Practice. We release a new episode every other Wednesday.
You've been listening to Sound Practice, the business podcast for physicians and healthcare leaders. Check out the show notes for this episode at soundpractice.com. If you have any suggestions for future episodes, we'd love to hear them. Email us at info@soundpractice.com. Subscribe to Sound Practice wherever you listen to podcasts so you can automatically receive our episodes. And please rate us and comment on the podcast in iTunes and Google Play. Sound Practice is presented and produced by the team at American Association for Physician Leadership. We are the world's premier organization for all aspects of physician leadership in every sector of healthcare. Learn more at physicianleaders.org. Holy cow, Batman and Robin, Rick Capow.